Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM with co-host Voss Larikos. Voss, how you doing?
Doing well, Ken. Doing well. Was pleased by the draft haul that Eric DaCosta and the Ravens were able to land in the 2025 NFL draft, and looking forward to the season. Pretty complete team as it sits currently.
Yeah, good draft for the Ravens. It's well known that I don't feel it's that great about the Starks pick, but I don't feel terrible, and I feel we'll need to frame this up. If the order had been reversed, I'd have loved this draft. And, you know, but it is saying that, you know, one right makes up for a wrong, or, an outsized right in this case makes up for a wrong. And I don't really feel that way still about the fact that they missed on Derwin James with their first pick in 2018, even though they had the greatest draft in Ravens history. So, yeah. It's kind of a frustrating thing anyway. DaCosta everybody seems really all in on Starks from what I can see. So hopefully he's a player. Are you expecting him to be a pure free safety, or do you think they'll try and tap into that flexibility?
I do expect him to be a pure free safety. And that was the main reason why he was pretty high up on my wish list on day one. They have a lot of guys that have that versatility. They don't need to add another one who's not so good at doing that. There's not a whole lot of guys that have instincts and range that can play free safety. So when you find one, you want to leave them there, in my opinion.
Yeah, I completely agree, first of all, in terms of the other. You really can't pay a premium for versatility otherwise. And if they did, we'll find out soon enough, because if he's on the back end, I think really needs to learn to play that position well, which in college, is coverage metrics just are not that good. So it's right. Hopefully that's just a matter of usage and not getting familiar and, all the other things that come with being a freshman playing in the SEC on a regular basis, which is impressive in its own right. Hopefully playing free safety at the NFL level is going to come pretty quickly.
Hopefully, some of these loaded teams, the Alabama defenses of years past, the Georgia defenses recently, sometimes players are propped up by the supporting cast. So we'll see how it goes. But I really wanted a free safety, and I was happy. As the last show we did, I believe that was my top need. And so happy to see that addressed there. And then happy with the pass rusher pick as well. I know some folks are not keen on, some of the troubles he's had in his past. But for me, I was born and bred on Brian Billick's Ravens, so I'm more concerned about what happens between the lines. Maybe there's a way to line of demarcation where the Ravens can be willing to give players second chances, but if they mess up or make a misstep while they're on the Ravens' clock or on their watch, that's when they cut bait, potentially.
Well, they reportedly have done a lot of due diligence in terms of Mike Green and trying to figure out if he's he was a guy they could draft. And obviously they were under tremendous pressure that they knew would occur, that the questions they knew would occur with Tucker now appearing to be on his way out between the combination of the draft and another kicker brought in. So, I hope they really believe that their due diligence is as unturned all the stones. And if it has, then Mike Green is going to be a great pick. It's going to be a great pick.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right, let's move on. We'll talk 50-year options here. Those were announced today, yesterday, whichever it was. But they picked up the $18.6 million option on Hamilton for 2026, completely expected. The 18.6 for Hamilton is frankly cheap for him for next year. So it just provides a nice stepping stone to a long-term deal. It's exactly what you want to get out of the 50-year option is a bargain price on the player. They at the same time, they declined the $23.4 million option on Tyler Linderbaum. Now, Linderbaum's is higher for a couple of reasons. He's been Pro Bowler a couple of times. Hamilton may have been only once. I'm unsure of that, actually. His salary is also based on the average of all offensive linemen and not just the centers, because the top center contract in the entire game is right now is Creed Humphrey, who makes $18 million average annual value, and starting Linderbaum off at $23.4 million for 1 year would definitely tilt the table on any negotiations.
Correct. As expected, you know, there was rumors. I think someone asked Linderbaum at his most recent press availability if he had heard any discussions, and he said, no, haven't talked about that at all. It's just too much money for a center, and there's no two ways about it, really. I was not a huge fan of Linderbaum coming out of the draft or the year he was drafted. I was in the minority of the flock. I don't think the issues in pass protection are ever going to go away. He's not terrible, but he's not elite in pass protection. Had some issues with snaps last year, uncharacteristically, and also short yardage. When you're undersized, that shows up in these short yardage key crucial situations. So I think he's a very good center, but I don't think he's worth top of the market money.
Well, I'm at the same point, and the situation has been complicated in recent days because Cam Jurgens, the Eagles center, just signed a deal for $17 million. Of AAV. And I would think Linderbaum and his people are going to say, well, the market's 17 million and up. And they might think it's really 18 million and up anyway, because Creed Humphrey signed his deal last year, whenever it was. I think it might have been
last year. Yeah.
You're right. Yeah. 24 that he signed it. And then it was a 4-year extension though. So they played under the 5th-year option and then had a 4-year extension. I'm sorry. Played under the current contract and then had a 4-year extension. But I don't see Linderbaum setting the market at center. I don't think that's appropriate. I don't think he's good enough to be the guy. That's just the straight fact. And I'm with you. Exactly what you said are exactly the reasons that it's always true for any offensive line position that run blocking is more important than pass blocking. And PFF in particular has
the other way around.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yes, you're correct. Correct. The pass blocking is more important than run blocking. Thank you.
Yep.
But PFF has led us in a different down a different kind of a dark alley that basically weights it in this bizarro world 85-15 run blocking component for an overall rating for a center. And their guys know it, by the way. Their guys are perfectly aware that that's not appropriate. They say, you know, their top guys say, look at separate pass and run blocking numbers and make your decision based off that. But don't try and look at the combined score. But the other thing they also say is that they had to do it that way in order to get enough differentiation among centers, because there is differentiation among run blocking and there's not a whole lot of differentiation among pressures allowed and some of the other pass blocking statistics. So, you know, it's just their need to model something which creates this, you know, significant differences among center is flying in the face of what's actually important for the position. And very frustrating to me. That this has gone on that way. I also believe I have heard that the NFL, who is really the big client of PFF now, has basically told them that that's the way they like to see it. They want to see a differentiation, which is really strange.
I'd opine that what the split is, 60-40 maybe, or I don't know, 55-45, if you want to shade it the direction of pass protection, I certainly agree with that. I'd even think that run blocking is even less valuable for a Lamar Jackson-led offense. You know, certainly Linderbaum is tremendous at getting at the second level and getting downfield and blocking 30, 40 yards downfield like no other center can, but the Ravens already have an elite rushing attack, so I don't know how much added value that's bringing to the table. So I'd like to keep him around, but it's going to be a right price situation in my view.
That's where I am too. And I hope they can find that right place. I'd love for him to be a Baltimore Raven long term, but it does have to be at the right price. This is a general problem for centers and guards in the league. And it's, you could argue that it helps or hurts the players of the team. I'm not really sure which, but if the centers don't have a good landing spot for the fifth year option, which is a nice way the centers kind of force the team into early action on their fifth year, then they have no protection from that fifth year option. The team obviously has no protection. And it means, I think it really means you can't draft a center in the first round.
I agree. It
probably means you can't draft a guard in the first round too.
I agree on that as well. Okay. If you were really a desperate team with a statuesque quarterback, I could see the case for that. If they were a tremendous, you know, pass blocking guard potentially, or just an all pro center, but with dual threat quarterback, I think you're better off investing in tackles and pass catchers and pass defenders.
Yep. Well, the Ravens did a pretty good job of otherwise bolstering their offensive line. I think we'll get to some of that later if we're talking about unanswered questions here. Just to extend the Linderbaum thing here, the Ravens now are under tremendous pressure to get him signed. And look, it's not like we haven't been right on top of this the whole time. We've been talking about this all basically offseason, and from last season is basically the fifth-year option wasn't going to get picked up. And the Ravens now, I thought there was a lot of pressure to sign him before May 2nd. But, you know, obviously the team and Linderbaum have had those discussions already. This does not come as a surprise to Tyler. I don't believe this comes as a surprise to him at all. And so now the real question is, where is the next element of risk that basically starts to take divisible benefit off the table? Because as a player, the reason why you'd sign a contract early is to eliminate the risk of injury and other things. And it starts really at training camp, but certainly when the first game is played, since Linderbaum won't play a lot of preseason football. But they may have a joint practice, you know, that'll be very physical with somebody. They'll have their own practices, which tend to be not very physical with each other. But there is always risk that he could lose time because of something that happens at practice, and he's got to want to get signed long term, certainly before the season starts.
Yeah, I would, if I was DaCosta sitting in DaCosta's shoes, or I forget the other gentleman who negotiates most of the contracts. His name
Moriarty.
Just slipped. No, someone took over from him. Okay. Just slipped off the tip of my tongue. I would make him an offer of $13 million per year, over 4 years maybe. That would still keep him in the top five of all centers, but that would place him just below Frank Ragnow, who I believe is a superior player. So and then if he has a bang-up year, an excellent year, gets back to his pack protection from 2 years ago, then maybe you revisit and renegotiate later on towards the end of this, before free agency starts. I think that's how I would approach it.
I think you need to put escalators in there if you're saying he needs to have a bang up year. So if he meets some pass blocking threshold, then he goes up to a $17 million a year center or whatever it is. But it's a difficult contract to structure because pass blocking metrics are not well understood, and they're just not well done, frankly. But they're not well understood, certainly. Mm-hmm. So. You know, in terms of how high you're willing to go, my number is probably, I think they're locked in at the $17 million minimum. And if they had to sign it for 4 for $68 right now, I'd probably go ahead and do it. My number before the season started was 4 for $64. It is a lot of money to pay the center position. And, you know, part of me is if Linderbaum is forced out because of this, part of me is going to be saying, phew, that's a lot of money off the table, for off the cap table, that the Ravens really need to figure out how to economize. And there are players that would let them do that if they in fact the Ravens may have drafted one, and so we'll see how that works out this year.
The Ravens are not necessarily playing by the same set of rules as the Eagles. The Eagles have $500 million of void money. They can afford to have a dozen cornerstone players. I don't think the Ravens are going to operate like that. They don't operate like that. So you have to say, who are our eight cornerstone guys? And it doesn't make sense to have definitely not two, and I would say not even one, at a position that can be replaced for a reasonable level of play relatively cheaply.
Right. Yeah, and that's absolutely true. And that's on the offensive line at guard or center. You don't always get the highest quality of play, and you know it would be a step down from Linderbaum. But it could still be a pretty decent player at, 20% of the price very easily. It could literally be 80% of the player at 20% of the price, right?
Well, I mean, one of the best offensive seasons of all time was with Pat McCary and Matt Skura. Right. rotating at center. So
yeah, good point. Yeah. And both those guys came in as undrafted free agents and mm-hmm. you know, put up great seasons for the Ravens. So certainly something they've done well at. Let's move on. We'll talk about some unanswered questions because we're through the draft right now. And there are, I think, several unanswered questions, but I'll tell you what the high level theme on this. And I put down five position groups where I think they have questions, either long-term or short-term. But for in general, I would say this team is in a remarkable position coming out of the draft. I don't know that they've ever been stronger coming out of the draft. Like they've always had the need to go out and find, now it's a second wave of free agency. Let's find that free agent pass rusher out there. Now that it's the second wave. And their needs are very tiny across the board in terms of what they still need to do on the open market. How do you feel about that?
I completely agree there. You know, and they don't need premium positions necessarily because they drafted them and signed them and have developed them. So they're more options available for if you need a nose tackle, there are still some nose tackles out there, for instance. Mm-hmm. So I think they're in a really good spot. I would say another three or four veterans to be added, but it's, what was it, 2 years ago where they had to pick up Darby and Clowney and they ended up being very important players. Right. And we were extremely concerned about the pass defense at that point. Now you need a few pieces here and there just to give you a little insurance. It's a very good place to be.
Yeah, I agree. Now, the safety position, as much as it was a place where they definitely need a very high quality player, I still believe is one of the places where they need another player. So Starks will be at free safety. But one of the things the Ravens have had a lot of difficulty with is losing a player and then being forced to put Hamilton back in a position where he was not being able to use flexibly. So to me, the Ravens, even though they just acquired a guy who can play deep safety, you know, a guy who can play the back end, they need another guy who can play a half field back end. It does not, I really want them to avoid the mistake of Eddie Jackson and go for a more of a younger, coachable player who they think has a couple of years of team control. I wouldn't even mind bringing in two guys into camp and trying to figure out which one of two rookies you really like in that spot and then having, you know, these two guys, call them Will Demps 1 and Will Demps 2, mm-hmm. be the guy you then choose and maybe keep the other on the practice squad as well because, say, hey, I can never have too many of these. Mm-hmm. And then you give yourself the option for not only a 4-to-make-3 safety group, which they have right now, but for a 5-to-make-4 safety group where Hamilton can go to the dime and you can also use, say, an Ardarius Washington in the slot if you wanted to.
I'm 100% in agreement with you there. Safety remains one of the top needs on the team. I certainly think they should be a 5-to-make-4 53-man roster position. If you're considering Starks to free safety, which I am, you would say Hamilton, Washington, and Marlon Humphrey are probably going to maybe split the nickel snaps a third. And that's if Owusie performs on the outside and Marlon isn't needed on the outside. If not, the two starting safeties last year might do half and half. And I would certainly like the option to use Hamilton as the dime, which I think we touched on two shows ago. So you essentially have starters and nothing else. You still don't have the depth. And Bo Braid and Sanusi Kane are not players that I want to see playing defense anytime soon. So I would be in market for a mid-tier safety with some experience, but as you also said, with some youth to him who can help make sure that last line of defense is stout.
They do not seem confident that Braid or Kane can be there playing on the back end. And they just can't hold those roles for special teams only. They can't hold them. What they could do is try and make one of them a dime back in the preseason. They also don't seem to be confident that their current inside linebackers can hold up on third down. The Roquan will be out there, and Teddy Buchanan has been okay as a pass defender, but I don't see him as a three down guy. I don't see that Simpson as a three down guy. Certainly wasn't last year. So I think that they want to have a dime back, and hopefully they'll really make that a point of emphasis in the preseason if they want to try and get more out of Kane or Braid.
100% agree. I think Kane's skill set probably is a little bit more conducive to being the dime back. But really, I want to see Hamilton as the dime. I think the defense, if they could find a way to put Humphrey in the slot, Hamilton in the dime, and Starks on the back end, you would really have a lot of playmaking, takeaway, turnover production potential there.
All right, well, let's move on, and we'll talk about the offensive line a little bit, because it's an interesting situation on the offensive line. It certainly is not a completely settled situation, but that said, I think they have enough bodies to make the decision from where they are right now. And why don't you set this up for us, Voss?
Yes, so obviously Ronnie Stanley was re-signed, 3-year deal, probably going to play at least two of those years, if not the third. Roger Rosengarten came with a very solid, steady rookie year at right tackle. And I believe that if Stanley were to fall to injury, Rosengarten would be the player to slide over to the left side. Now, he did require a lot of chip help, et cetera, last year, but you're hoping that he has a little bit of a jump between year one and year two. And I think he could be an adequate left tackle. However, the Ravens do not necessarily have a good backup option on the right side.
Yeah, and that's I think, the case that they have George Fant. They have George Fant, he might be a guy that they would sign and bring in, but that's not an ideal situation. They have the possibility of moving Rosengarten to the left side would be one thing they would try. I think if I'm reading the tea leaves here, I don't see any way that Emory Jones is not the first guy up at right tackle if something were to happen. So he won't be at left tackle. I think he'll move to the right side, and that means Rosengarten to the left. It means you got two risks instead of one, I think that's the way they would minimize the aggregate level of risk is by trying it that way.
It's a scarce position. We've discussed that since the inception of the show, not a whole lot of teams have a good third tackle. Some teams don't even have a good second tackle. Some teams don't even have one good tackle at all. So if there is a player available that could give competition to Emory Jones, I'd certainly be in favor of bringing them in. And George Fant seems like probably the best option available at the moment.
Yeah, he well could be. I don't know if you mentioned Carson Vinson, because I had to step away for just a second, but Carson Vinson won't see the field in 2025. He's a fourth round pick. The bench rep total would tell you, excuse me, that they're well short on functional strength. Mm-hmm. So as much as Warhop loves him, 2026 is the earliest time we'll see him on the field.
Yeah, definitely needs a lot of work in the weight room. You cannot be an underpowered tackle and excel in the AFC North, no question about it.
Very good to see, by the way, that video that made it very clear whose draft pick it was. I'm very happy to see that Warhop was pounding the table for him, and Harbaugh said, you know, he's our guy. The Ravens have not gone down that path in a number of years where they drafted a true developmental offensive tackle. They've had guys they've brought in later rounds, but all the like small school guys. The last one they drafted of this type was Greg Sinnott, and they couldn't find space on their roster to keep him. Before that, I couldn't even tell you who the last one was before that, but it's been a long time. It's typically the guys who are true developmental tackles are guys who are somehow physically limited and have played at small schools, but otherwise have the frame you expect. And the ideal thing to be physically limited at is strength, because you can grow into that. You can grow into your body a little more. The Ravens also got a couple of undrafted free agents, by the way, who are similar in terms of their background. They got Jared Penning, who's Trevor Penning's brother, who's playing left guard at Northern Iowa and played left tackle after he left there. He's a guy who's got a ways to grow into his body. And the other guy they got is GCL Jared Christian Lichtenhan, I believe is the guy's name. I might be mispronouncing it slightly there, but he's essentially a very soft upper body guy with a big gut. He has a long way to get toned and whatnot enough to play in the NFL. Both those guys are a year away. So they now have actually three offensive tackles who are going to be in camp who are at least a year away from playing. I do actually love that. And, you know, what DaCosta did that I thought was really good is he used the time they had. They have 2 years at least with Ronnie Stanley and Rosengarten, and three if the Stanley contract is played out all the way. And you know, having that kind of a runway allows you to take some chances on a developmental player like this, but it does mean a roster spot on the 53 will be used for the entire season without that player getting any playing time.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously they can't activate everybody, and with the practice squad elevations rules, it doesn't, it's not as bad as it used to be. Mm-hmm. Maybe they could put these tackles in touch with Nick Boyle's trainer and expedite the process of getting them adding strength.
Nick Boyle's trainer, you said?
Yes.
Okay. All right. There's probably a story here that I don't remember or don't know, but that's good. So if we're looking at the second man up this year, I think we're down to Falele or Cleveland would be the next guy to go in at right tackle. So the second man up situation, and every NFL team has fears of this type. But last year, the Ravens had Jones and McCary were both on the roster, and they lost them both, obviously, when they and signed Stanley. Difficult kind of a combination, a three-way to do. It really gives you kind of a viewpoint into what it might be like next year at tight end, that they're going to be able to sign one guy, but not two, kind of thing. Let's move to the rest of the offensive line for a second. Emory Jones, are you thinking he will challenge for a guard spot, or do you think he basically will be a backup for this year?
It's hard to say without seeing him on the field, at least in rookie camp. I think he could challenge for a guard spot, and I'm not totally I hate the idea of Falele serving as a backup right tackle either. With a year of experience under his belt, albeit at guard, that does hypothetically advance his developmental curve. And with the amount of chip help they provided Rosengarten last year, I think they could probably do the same with Falele in case of emergency. So I think they're okay in an okay spot at tackle. At guard, you know, I do think they really like Falele, and so I could see Jones challenging Voorhees potentially. So it's good to have competition, right? Iron sharpens iron, as Harbaugh always says.
Yeah, so I don't think there's any harm in having another guard competing for time, certainly. And Emory Jones, I don't really see him being an ideal left guard, because I think the movement component of it is probably not going to be his ideal thing. Ravens really have lacked mobility at that left guard spot for now, really quite some time. But they've made average athletes into decent pullers, Bozeman, Hurst being the prime examples. I always say, you guys already know the two names I'm going to mention. And the guy I think is the most interesting among the draft picks, and a guy I think is going to make the roster, is Dellinger. Dellinger now looks to me like a guy who not only could he be a backup left guard this year, maybe a guy who sees, you know, a fair number of game day activations because you have to activate eight guys, but also a guy who might have the movement skills not only to play guard, but a year from now, if, you know, Linderbaum doesn't, you know, the Ravens and Linderbaum can't come to an agreement on the money, then he leaves, Dellinger could be the Ravens center.
Absolutely. Developing late round and even undrafted free agents in the interior of the offensive line has been one of the strengths of the team going all the way back to Mike Flynn. And, you know, that's where that added value, the surplus value comes in handy. When you see the kind of money that guards and even centers are making now, when you can take a guy, even a Bozeman, I thought they had tremendous value in Bozeman's contract, even though he wasn't the best player, just because, you know, being an average player or slightly above average on a, supposedly a six round contract. It's great value there.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And, you know, the limitations of Bozeman were well discussed when he was coming out in the draft, that he was a guy who really didn't move that well.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity, and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis, so you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies, and let me tell you, takes about 15 minutes and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to Mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
And the Ravens coach him up into a pretty damn decent puller. He certainly did other things well enough to get by. And honestly, it was only really after he left the Ravens that his troubles really started in terms of not being as good a player with Carolina as he had been here.
Ryan Jensen's another one, too. I thought they had tremendous value in the last,
tremendous value.
On his last couple of years of his deal.
Yeah, he's a sixth round pick, I think, if I recall on Jensen.
Fifth or sixth. And he was a converted tackle. You know, they just bump him inside until they find where they can make it work.
There's a lot of guys who fall into that category. We did a show on that recently. They have two other guys who are still hanging around camp. I think they're on futures deals currently, so I expect them to be at camp. But Corey Bullock, for the former Maryland guard, is still around. He could compete for a roster spot. And Darian Dalcourt. The reason why he's interesting is because he's played a fair amount of center in the preseason. And so I think that he's a guy who might threaten for a roster spot. I'm not convinced Nick Samak, you know, has any kind of anything but a fingernails grip on that last roster spot on the offensive line currently. So he'll be pressured by the young guys. And you're always kind of at a disadvantage, even in your second year, to a rookie who's coming in and has an extra year of time under contract.
Sure. I hope we don't see a whole lot more of Ben Cleveland at center. Let's let some players that could hypothetically play center in the regular season earn or carry those snaps in the preseason so you can get a good evaluation on them.
Yeah, you know what would be interesting is if they do end up playing Cleveland a little bit at center and they extend him in the season, be a pretty clear indication to Linderbaum about what's going on.
You go from one of the smaller centers to one of the biggest center ever, maybe.
it'd be a lot of fun. I think he would be the biggest center ever. Let's move on. Let's talk about the defensive line a little bit here, because this was a very deep defensive line draft. And the Ravens, in a lot of ways, I'm kind of clutching pearls, gnawing on fingernails, whatever it might be, all the way through to the end of the draft where the Ravens finally picked up Aeneas Peebles in the fifth round. That the Ravens hadn't really gotten a taste of this delicious, delicious draft of defensive linemen.
Yeah, if you want to look at the draft and say, what's the one position that got away, I think it'd clearly be defensive line. Just the board doesn't always fall right. And sometimes that means that next year the board will fall in your favor because there's less teams with a need at the certain position that was stacked in the previous draft and got picked. I definitely do think the Ravens need to go to the street and add a stout player that can help replace Michael Pierce production. Probably not going to be the pass rusher Pierce was, but at least if you can replicate his two-gapping ability so that if in case of injury to Jones or Badabike potentially, but especially Jones, you have somebody there. You know, Broderick Washington is not a zero tech or a one tech in my eyes. Yeah. And obviously Pebbles is not either. So you need somebody there. Fortunately, there are quite a few guys still out there. We'll get to that.
So I'm in agreement that I don't see any harm in bringing in a guy on a non-guaranteed contract at nose tackle. Now, I don't know if there's a guy out there who wants to sign on that kind of a basis, but I do like their two undrafted free agents at camp. And I think it sets up as one of the most fun battles of the preseason will be between Nash Hutmaker, who came out of Nebraska, and Jason Jones from Auburn. Those are two guys who each of them has a chance to be in their own way a really fine nose tackle with the Ravens. If one of these works out, the defensive line is going to be fine in aggregate, by the way. They've got everybody they need. They've got Peebles, and then they've got Washington Jones and Madubuike, and they probably will not have Urban. They probably will not have Urban no matter what, honestly, at this point.
Yeah. if it's a non-guaranteed contract, I mean, I'd like to keep him in the organization, but you know, I think he just doesn't quite bring the juice that he used to as far as pass rush. And you just don't use a five tech. What do you use a five tech again when you play Cleveland? That's pretty much it, right? For the most
part. Yeah, I mean, you don't use the base defense very much. So a five tech is kind of a dying spot. But the defense definitely got a lot younger with Pierce and Urban if they're both replaced by rookies. They still could, and Peebles is a lot of youth period to replace half of that. Even if you went out and you got a veteran nose tackle, you still have a good shift to lower aged players. But I really like if they keep one of Hutmaker or Jones. And have you heard the story about Hutmaker from any of the other shows?
Or I have not. No. Okay. I didn't catch that.
I'm going to go over this briefly because this is just too cool a story to mm-hmm. not know. So Hutmaker is a guy with a wrestling background. First of all, wrestling background, immediately my ears pick out. You don't need to know as much about arm length. They've got great understanding of leverage on the inside. And you guys who are great wrestlers, they tend to be really, really productive tacklers. Okay, mm-hmm. So they can be not good at some other things. They might not be great at standing up to a double team necessarily, but they are unbelievably productive at getting free and making tackles, grappling people to the ground. Hutmaker, in eighth grade, was asked to wrestle on the high school team. Now, that's not that unusual, particularly when you're going for lower weight class guys. You know, you want to find a guy who'll wrestle 102. You may not have a guy to wrestle at that level. I don't even know if that's a real weight class, by the way, folks. I literally know nothing about this. But if you have a guy in eighth grade who might be a little bit ahead of the curve, you bring him up and then he gets some forfeits and occasionally maybe he has to wrestle and maybe not. But I do know. At the first school I went to, there was a smaller guy. I doesn't matter the reason why, but he's a smaller guy. He was a very dominant wrestler because he was always wrestling people who were like fifth graders or sixth graders or something. And, you know, didn't know what they were doing. Huh. And this is a case in Hutmaker's class. So they asked him. They asked his parents, could he wrestle? And they're like, I don't know. It might get hurt. And they showed these people on screen. First of all, Hutmaker's father is the biggest like weightlifting dude you'll ever see. He's like massive and broad. It looks like he was born on a Harley, frankly. And his mother is not necessarily athletic looking woman, but just, you know, a substantial woman as well. And then you realize that they asked him in eighth grade to come up and wrestle heavyweight. Not to come up and wrestle at 102 or 150.
Oh, yeah. That's a whole different ballgame.
A whole different ballgame. So he wrestled as a heavyweight in eighth grade and in South Dakota went to the state championship finals and lost.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So that's pretty freaking incredible. As a high school player starting in ninth grade, he won every one of his wrestling matches, had 72 consecutive pins at one point, and finished the season as the number one ranked, now finished his senior season as the number one national ranked heavyweight. Okay. Wow. In winning the high school, this is just so much interesting data here that I got to repeat it all. In winning the state championship as a senior and South Dakota, I don't know, 16, 32 wrestlers. How many could there be? It's probably not that many. He spent less than 2 total minutes on the mat to win that tournament. So he's pinning guys in like 25 seconds. Do this. So you have a guy who has unbelievable skills. I'm telling you, if you're not hyped up about Nash Hutmaker already, you got a problem. Anyway, went to Nebraska and was very effective there. Had a really good pass rushing season in his junior year where he was penetrating. He's, by the way, very natural penetrator. Doesn't even really want a two gap. He wants to throw people aside, get in the backfield and create havoc. I'm fine with that, by the way. I think that you can win with either method. You just, if you don't have a two gapper, then your linebacker's got to be more on their toes in terms of making sure that they're closing ground behind them. But this is a guy who denies space in the backfield behind the line of scrimmage, not at the line of scrimmage. So it's going to be very fun to see that guy. So anyway, I believe he's probably going to be the winner, but Jason Jones of Auburn is more of your traditional two gap player, who's 6'6", 325, has all the size you expect out of the position. Hutmaker's a little smaller. He weighs like 312 or something. They can probably put extra poundage on that, but Kelly Gregg was very effective. And I think if you're looking for the most similar Raven in history, Nash Hutmaker and Kelly Gregg, if they're as similar as I think they might be, would be unbelievably cool.
That's very appealing. That's very appealing. I did not know the extent of his wrestling background. That certainly boosts his stock in my book. The understanding of leverage, the way the wrestlers have, and obviously Linderbaum's a good wrestler too. Really, it's crucial. It's such a good benefit. If the Ravens do want to look at the veteran crop, maybe to on a non-guaranteed contract, offer competition to the undrafted free agents. A couple names available: Linval Joseph, who's been around a long time, signed a contract around the same time Brandon Williams signed his, has had a pretty similar career. He's your big wide body two gapper, essentially. A couple other names: Raekwon Davis, who was, I believe, the third round pick out of Alabama, played for Miami. He's a little bit taller, so not necessarily your zero tech. But he's available. Tier Tart is another player who had some good stout rum stuffing years for the Titans. A couple younger guys, Taven Bryant, who was a former first-round pick of Jacksonville, and Khalil Davis, who I believe was a third-round pick out of Nebraska. They're still available. And those are only I honestly got this from a list, I believe, Ryan Mink made on BaltimoreRavens.com of 10. And those are the five of the 10, but it is a deep group as it usually is. So I do think the Ravens will be in good shape once they add a couple more bodies. And I think there are several interesting bodies to add.
So first of all, that does sound like a great list to have names like that on it. But I'm happy bringing in one. I'm also happy if that guy doesn't make the team and the two Ravens end up one making the team and one being on the practice squad. Those guys, and in particular nose tackles, are guys you typically can call mid-season. And in fact,
yes,
you need to look no further than that 2019 Ravens season when they called Jelly Ellis and who's the other guy? The guy who used to play for Cincinnati.
It's slipping my mind.
Yeah.
That's stuck in my mind. But yeah, Chemo, they called in midseason, I think 2 years before. They needed a guy in the midseason. And they Maki Kimoato, they added. I'll find the name because now it's going to bug me who it was.
Yeah. Maki Kimoato, they brought back to the last time, I think, in 2012 for the Super Bowl run. And he was back. But in 2019, they got the ex-Cincinnati guy. I apologize for getting his name right now. But it's that was part of a great defensive turnaround, but it shows you there still are guys on the street, if you know what you're doing, that you can go get. I think they could get, you know, if there's a list of 10 they have right now, I don't think there's 10 teams looking for nose tackles right now. I think it's a size and shape pool, which is, it's fairly deep, but it's also one that you don't, most teams don't really want more than one guy of the traditional build, but the Ravens are a team, I think, who wants two. And
Petco, Domata Petco.
That's it. Domata Petco.
That's the one. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So, and he was good. I mean, he was really good. In Ellis's case, they overworked him a couple of times, but Petco definitely provided value. Mm-hmm. All right. So anyway, we're both on agreement that the Travis Jones extension looks as important as ever right now. That his pairing with Madubuike on obvious passing downs is still the Ravens' strength on the defensive line.
1,000%. If you could allow me to re-sign one player that's not under contract two years, Travis Jones is easily my top choice.
Okay. So he's ahead of Likely, ahead of Andrews, ahead of Oway, and ahead of Linderbaum.
He is. Okay. 100%.
All right. I think I'm in the same spot on that too. I think he's the hardest to replace.
Yep.
All right. Let's move on. Talk about the tight end position. The Ravens, honestly, the Armageddon clock is ticking down right now on the Ravens in terms of the end of the 2025 season, when Patrick Ricard and all three of their tight ends will no longer be under contract. And we know how difficult it will likely be to re-sign multiples of that, multiples among them. So they probably can re-sign Ricard, and they probably can re-sign one tight end, but I doubt they're going to be able to re-sign three. If they're going to re-sign three out of four guys, they really need to get to it right away, because it's otherwise could be a very difficult and rocky 2025-26 offseason trying to recover at that position, which has been very important to the Ravens.
So Likely would be my second on the list as far as if I could re-sign one player. Now I do think the franchise tag could be an option for Isaiah Likely. The franchise tag for tight ends this season was $13.6 million,
really?
Which is the third lowest of all positions, only above specialists and running backs. So I think if you look to extend likely, you're probably looking at 15, 16, 17, maybe APY. So I think the franchise tag is a relative backstop to that, to the exodus for likely, in likely's case.
That's good. That's providing what the fifth year option does in terms of market frictions and giving a stepping stone into that contract. I like that. I wasn't aware of that. I appreciate you cluing me in on that. Now, if you look at what the Ravens got at the tight end position this year, tight end or fullback for that matter, they picked up Sam Pitts, who's a UDFA signing from Minnesota Duluth. Now, he was a very good player at that level. I still have a heart, but he's typical kind of not particularly large at 6'6", 243. So he's tall, but he's not a big frame guy who's going to be a great blocker. At least I don't believe so. That's not much. And I would think that, you know, Travis Vokolek, I would say, because I think Vokolek played at a little higher level prior to coming to the NFL. I would think he would have been a higher level player. We had Kadir Ishmael in camp last year, who's since signed with the Raiders, I believe.
Raiders or Broncos. Yeah, he just left last week, I think, right? 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Somewhere in the AFC West. I do know that.
Raiders. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was not completely unexpected, but also kind of frustrating that they didn't get another chance at him. So they're down. That's another position where I guess they could get another player. The key in their case there is at tight end is to have one player on the practice squad who doesn't completely degrade what you're trying to do at the position when you make that move in season.
Yeah.
I guess I had the question for 26. Does this mean the Ravens might shift to a more 11 heavy offense, because they're still the heaviest team in football by far, despite the fact they got rid of Greg Roman?
I hope they do. And I know that not everyone agrees. I know some love the 12 personnel run the ball down your face offense. But I personally am of the mind that Lamar would benefit from more spread. Lamar personally, his skill set before his speed and elusivity starts to decline. So I've been hoping for more 13 since 2019, and we haven't really seen it. We saw a little bit more in 2021, I believe, than the other years. But I do hope that that would be the way they go. There obviously is benefits to being a tight end centric offense. The franchise tag number for likely is a prime example of that. But I think maybe more 11, less 12 could maybe be one of the levers they could try to see to get over the postseason hump a little bit.
Okay. Well, I'm with you in terms of the financial benefits of being a 12 heavy, 13 heavy team. I'm with you entirely. And I think I have a hard time getting by the big numeric example here, which is that the Ravens the last 2 years, the passer rating throwing to the tight ends has been like 143. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's hurting Lamar to have a tight end heavy offense. And certainly, you know, in terms of the season Lamar just had, I think it'd be really hard to say, hey, what, just one more wide receiver, that'll, you know, put him over the top and to the highest passer rating of all time. I think the situation now is actually very good for him. So I wouldn't rock the boat on what you have, because you have already the cheaper, the more economical, you know, puzzle pieces in place. And you'd like to replace them in a way that will be less economically challenging in the future. And the more wide receivers you have and you have to pay in the future, the more difficult it's going to be. They're going to find that out pretty soon with Flowers and then with Bateman.
I'm not necessarily in favor of paying either Flowers or Bateman big money when you can go out and get a Hopkins for a cheap deal. Maybe that's the pipeline you can tap into, that third, fourth contract receiver as your third or fourth option, while also continuing to replenish the inventory with top 100 wide receiver picks in the draft, and you play them on the rookie deals and you don't necessarily pay them afterwards.
Okay. I mean, I'd be okay with that as well. I don't even mind expending top draft capital to get out of paying big cap dollars.
Right.
So I think that makes a lot of sense from that perspective. I just don't think they're going to be able to hit on every single pick in the first round the way they have for the last couple. I mean, Bateman, it's taken a while for this to work out, but now Bateman is a top receiver, and Flowers worked out from day one. Rashad Perriman did not, I'm trying to think of who else they've had. They've drafted as a number one wide receiver.
Taylor, Mark Clayton.
Yeah.
I think it seems, back then college offenses didn't pass as much, and now they pass a lot more, and you have more data to work off of. I'd be interested to see the hit rate on receivers in the top 100. I did a study a couple years ago, haven't had much time to do an update that recently, but the preponderance of receivers drafted in the top 50, 60, 70 picks hit maybe more than most positions, to be honest, these days.
Okay. All right. Well, could well be. And there certainly is a heavy premium on them in the first round. Let's go on. I've got one final position group that I want to hit on. That's the running back group. Really, the Ravens are staring like tight end in a 2026 problem that's coming up with Henry in the final year of his contract in 25. An extension now looks kind of difficult with the market set by Barkley. I guess running back is also a position where they could use the franchise tag on Henry, mm-hmm. assuming his current contract doesn't have some language precluding that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Me personally, I don't think the running back position benefits as much as maybe any other position as far as future-proofing succession planning. I think they're fine to address it next year. This was a very good running back class. A lot of teams picked good running backs, which means that there are not going to be as many teams that have a needed running back next year. And I don't want to spend – well, I'm very happy that they did not draft a running back early or at all. I think they're in good shape at running back, and I don't think that some team is going to come in and offer – let's say they do want to keep Derrick Henry next year. I don't think another team is going to come and offer him a package that's necessarily going to blow the Ravens out of the water if they did want to retain him. So they want to go ahead and use a third or fourth round pick on a fresh back next year to be the new J.K. Dobbins, give you 3 good years and move on. That would be the best strategy regarding that position, because there's just so many of them. And in this offense, all of them produce, even Devontae Freeman on his 32-year-old season or whatever it was. So I think they're fine there. I have zero concern about running back, short-term or long-term.
Okay, well, very good. I'm with you in terms of every running back is made better by Lamar. They do have an unknown future out of Mitchell. Hill is getting a little bit older. At some point, they're going to want to reduce what he does in the offense, but still probably has a year or two left. And Ali is not a guy I have confidence in making the team this year. So I don't see the value in keeping a fourth running back on this team where there are other needs to hold a spot. And I'd go as far as to say, I value the spot used on Carson Vinson as a developmental offensive tackle, even though he will never see the field in 2025, more than I would value holding on to Rasheen Ali.
Completely agree. I'd rather have roster a sixth safety or even a fifth tight end versus a fourth running back personally, or even a seventh wide receiver, I guess, hypothetically. That to me, that's Ali. They could stash two guys that are Owen Wright types on the practice squad, and in the case of emergency, they're still fine as far as I see it.
Yep. Ali might in fact end up being one of them. He'd be cut from his contract, so he'd have to re-sign to the practice squad, but he could be one of them. But the Ravens this last year used Chris Collier and John Kelly that way, rotating three-game rotations, and you have three practice squad elevations you can use during the season. So it's an opportunity to not roster that extra player. And the Ravens really didn't have any RB3 carries pretty much the entire season. So they had a few from Mitchell late. They had a few from Ali in the middle of the season, but pretty much they did not go to their third running back.
That'd be great if Mitchell can a full off season past the surgery can regain some of that juice. Cause well, he was such a dynamic playmaker that first year.
It would be great. I don't think it's anything we can count on, but it took Lardarius Webb a whole year of waiting around after the injury to come back and be the best cornerback in all of football in 2011. Mm-hmm. If it were to happen again, it would be very, very exciting with Mitchell.
Definitely.
All right. Well, overall, I think, you know, we've talked our way through this. We've got five position groups of, you know, where there's still some things to be determined, but I'm excited about it. Generally, I don't think I'm ever this positive after the draft in terms of how well set the Ravens are. I can't remember the last time that I've thought,
yeah,
across the board, this team's in good shape.
I feel like DaCosta saw the board so clearly this year, what positions, and he leaned into needs maybe more than BPA than he has in years past, and the results are tremendous. The depth chart looks great. I think it's the best roster in the AFC currently, and the only roster I would say is clearly better than them is Philadelphia. And again, they're playing by a different set of rules with all that void year money.
Right. So the Piper will come to make them pay for it. And the Ravens salary cap situation, we can talk about this on another show, is getting more dire as the years go by, but the Ravens will have to come up with the next extension for Lamar Jackson fairly soon, at least by prior to next year at the very latest. Well, Voss, always great talking football with you. Tell people where they can talk to you, maybe online. I know you're very busy these days, but where can they hit you up?
I have not been online very much at all lately. Try to catch 5-10 minutes of the NBA playoffs if and when I can. And this is the least time I've had to enjoy the draft in many years. But you can find me online at Vasilis Fiamata, VASILISFIAMATA on Twitter X. Fiamata is the name of our relatively new restaurant. We're approaching our third month in a couple weeks. And I'd like to invite everybody to come and experience our cuisine at Fiamata Restaurant. Mother's Day is approaching. We have a few reservations still available. You can call us at 410-833-5777.
All right. Thanks, Voss. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, this is the season for it. Hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I want to talk to you about an idea for a show. Ideally this would be a short topic that would take about 20, 25 minutes. We're trying to provide some shorter content. A lot of what I do is very long form. And I know you listeners are tremendously loyal to it. It shows up in the listens and I really appreciate it, but I do want to try and reach another layer of an audience here with 20 minute content that would be, hopefully something to be more palatable to people that don't have as much time. For Voss Larikos, this is Ken McKusick saying goodbye. We'll talk to you next time on Friday Morning GM.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.